from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
Feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly guy, a graduate of Northeast High. You can't get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Welcome to another edition of the Howard Eskin Podcast.
Another great guest on this edition. A conversation with former Eagles quarterback, former Vikings quarterback, Randall Cunningham, a very, very interesting guy who is very flamboyant, did a lot of crazy things, both on and off the field. We'll talk to him. The Washington Redskins story, obviously, is a big story. I know it's a sports story, but I don't know if it's a sports story. It's disgraceful and disgusting that apparently, allegedly, that sexual harassment was going on at high levels at the Washington Redskins. And I think the commissioner has to and will fine the Redskins. But it doesn't sound like Daniel Snyder was involved in that, although as the owner, he's responsible for that. The other thing about fans, and fans want to go to games, and I get it. But we should all just try to be safe. Safe. Safe is the key word. We'll enjoy our sports. You won't be able to go to that many games anyway, because even if they let fans in, and I can't see how they should, there's not going to be that many games you can go to anyway, because there won't be that many fans. And I think the commissioner, Roger Goodell, if one team can't have fans, and there's going to be more than one that shouldn't have them, teams in the state of Florida, in the state of Texas. Sorry, Jerry Jones, your greed can't and shouldn't overcome this in Arizona and in California. It shouldn't happen. But fans just got to understand, just hope that we have a completed season and enjoy what we can watch on television. All right, here he is, former quarterback of the Eagles, Randall Cunningham.
I'm here with former Eagle quarterback Randall Cunningham, 16-year NFL career, 11 of those with the Eagles, many explosive and exciting plays, 4 Pro Bowls, and it was interesting in what Randall is doing now. Randall, thank you. And I'm going to talk about what you're doing now. But I want to, obviously, we're going to talk about your career, too. It's just, it's an interesting life that you have led. But welcome, and I really do appreciate this. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. It's good to be able to connect with the Philly fans. And I'm always excited to come on the radio show with you.
All right, thanks. All right, now here, let's look at your career. Your time in Philadelphia, and the easiest thing to say is, what do you remember the most? What is it that sticks out?
I remember this, and I often say this. I believe I was sent to Philadelphia to grow up and become a man, and I went through my bumps and my bruises, but I loved every moment of it, the good and the bad times, you know, the times when we were, you know, losing playoff games to the times that we won a playoff game to, you know, all the new coaches. And you know, I remember all my friends, the Falk family over there at in Cherry Hill, signing a deal to endorse Dodge and putting a billboard of me on the bridge going across the Walt Whitman, and just really developing relationships with a lot of great people. And I still have relationships with them today. So it's just a culmination of many things, but also really just learning how to walk as a Christian, you know, from Cedric Brown having a Bible study at my house years ago. I just realized I've been in ministry for almost 30 years. Yeah. And it's like, wow, I still remember being taught, submit to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except for that which God has established. And that kind of rebuked me back then and kind of changed my life, and I had to really get out of myself.
You know what? You obviously knew your calling. You're a West Coast guy, born in what, Santa Barbara?
Yes.
So
yep.
Coming to the East Coast, was that a big drafted by the Eagles in the second round? I think it was the second round because I guess they thought you were going to sign with the other football league. But
I had signed with the Tampa Bay Bandits.
Okay, so you were with the Tampa Bay, and eventually when you came to the Eagles. But was there a transition that you had to make being a West Coast guy coming to the East Coast?
Yeah, the weather, first of all. I had never been in weather. Never been in cloudy weather, cold, windy, you know. And, you know, in New Jersey, being in Morristown, I was in Morristown and Cherry Hill, the Garden State, adjusting to all the pollen in the air. It was a lot of things physically when it came to the weather, but just adjusting to the culture and adjusting to be around more cultures because, you know, on the West Coast, I've been around Hispanic people, Caucasian people, and scattered African Americans. But, yeah, it was definitely different to get to a town that had so many people that looked like me, you know, family members.
I do want to touch on different things that happened in your career, but you bring up all the different kinds of people. Obviously, what's going on in the country now, the pandemic is a, you know, we know that's really serious, but it's the social issues that have become the forefront. Your thoughts on what's going on in this country with all these social issues?
Well, I'll speak from a perspective, a godly perspective, because I really don't have an opinion when it comes to just me being an African-American, because if I look at it from that perspective, I'd probably lose my cool, because it's a very difficult thing seeing what's gone on, you know, from slavery on up. And it's a hurtful thing to talk about that. But when I look at it from the perspective of what God shows me spiritually, we have sincerely, and being a pastor, and we have people who watch us every Sunday from Philadelphia on remnantministries.net, our app. But from the point of view of what God has shown me, he's shown me that he's exposing us to ourselves and giving us an opportunity to get things right before him, because spiritually and as far as our faith of Christianity is concerned, Christ is going to come back one of these days, and he's coming back to redeem his people, but he expects a lot out of us. The word says, give and it will be given unto you. A lot of people look at that as a material thing, but what he wants to do is he wants us to give the love that we have, because he first loved us. And I think that if we can focus and get back to that and begin to love him with all of our heart, soul, mind, and all of our strength, and love our neighbor as ourselves, we can see growth. I don't know if this is going to change. I really don't, because there's evil in this world. And until the Lord Jesus comes back, it's going to be here. And, you know, the great thing is as long as we're on his team, we're victorious. He's already won the battle. He has been resurrected, and he's the risen Lord. So we have to look at life through spiritual eyes, because if not, we're going to miss what God is saying. He's the creator. He created us all.
Randall, I can hear how devoted you are, and I want to get into more of that later. But with that, it's interesting. When you were a player, you were flamboyant. You wore the wild suits. I mean, I like to dress well, too, but you wore the wild, I shouldn't say wild, fashionable to an extreme.
You can say wild. I was a little out there.
Okay. Well, that's the whole thing. Okay. So, throughout your life, you've been devoted to religion, it sounds like, even though when you were a football player. Yet, you were so flamboyant. You did things, the gold tip shoelaces, you know, all the different things that you did to show, do I want to say a wild side? Is that fair to show a wild side of Randall Cunningham? Where did the wild side come from?
Well, I'll tell you this. I was probably not a Christian when I got to Philadelphia. I might have grew up in the church, but I didn't understand what it meant to be born again. As a matter of fact, the person who asked me if I was born again, I said, what does that mean? And in 1987, that's when I started to walk as a Christian and had bumps along the road. But it was just style. It was just me trying to create a market for myself and trying to just really take advantage of everything I could. And people would come to me and ask me, hey, would you endorse our candy bar? Yes, indeed. Would you endorse our potato chips? We're going to put your name, Randall Cunningham Potato Chips. Gold tip shoelaces. Yes, yes. Oh, you wear a glove on your left hand, an Eastern glove. Will you endorse our product? Yes, I will. I wanted to take advantage of everything that was being offered because I didn't know how long my career would be. And I wanted to make sure that I endorsed everything so that I could put finances away for my kids to go to college. And, you know, when I was younger, I was, you know, my contract, I signed an $810,000 contract, which is a lot of money. But after taxes back then, it was like $390,000. So I was like, I didn't even understand the tax situation. And of course, Reggie White challenged me to be a tither. So first of all, 10% would come out, and then that 40 to 50% from the government. So I just really wanted to make as much as I could, put it away so I'd be able to take care of my family and live well.
Don't forget the candy bar, Randall. Yeah, the Randall Cunningham
candy bar. Let me tell you, I still eat that thing today. They did a great job with that. Oh, my God. I must have ate up about a box of those things a week. It was bad. Just,
they're still on eBay. Believe it or not, they're still on eBay. all right. Let's take a look at your coaches. An interesting dynamic. Buddy Ryan, who, I don't know if you remember, obviously I was an outspoken guy. You know that. I was outspoken towards, but I'm glad you forgave me.
I was dogging you out the other day. I'm just kidding.
Well, that's all right. I was dogging you out, too. We used to do a lot of that. Buddy Ryan was an interesting guy. And your thoughts, before I get into the next part of what I wanted to ask you, your thoughts of Buddy Ryan as your head coach?
Buddy was like our father, you know. What he did is he was training us to be his children, his sons. And, you know, he was a ballroom brawler, and that's what he wanted on the football field, that when we go out there, we hit him in the mouth. And that was, you know, the Philly style. You know, when people played us, it was going to be rough. It was going to be hardcore. And then we would shake hands at the end of the game. But he didn't want timid guys on the field. He didn't want quitters. He wanted soldiers, and he wanted army men who would be men of valor and would go out and not take any mess. And that's what he built. And he was like our father. I loved Buddy Ryan. I loved all the coaches that we had. Even though there were ups and downs with other coaches, I still respected them and appreciated them.
You know what? In one of the playoff games, I think it was Jim McMahon replaced you in a playoff game. He pulled you from the game. Mm-hmm. Did you still love Buddy Ryan at that point?
Yeah, he came to me as a man, and he said, hey, man, I need to go with Jim just for a moment just to change it up a little bit. I said, all right, coach. He put him in there. Of course, my competitive edge would have, I wanted to stay in there, you know. But, you know, it was a tough game, and then he put me back in. And after the game, the controversy started, and it was just like, whew, you know. But it was what it was, you know. He had trust in Jim McMahon. He didn't bring Jim McMahon to Philadelphia to take my job. He brought Jim McMahon to make a difference. And at times, Jim did his job. He did. He did a great job. And, you know, I was sitting over there, and I had to work hard, you know, to keep my career going.
You know, if I remember correctly, didn't you come in certain days? I've never seen that before. And replace Ron Jaworski in games? What were you, the third down quarterback? I don't know how, I forget
third
how long,
and long
that went. Yeah, right. How did that go?
I came in at third and long. Buddy, what he did was he was a percentage guy, and he was very simple and basic when it came to percentages. He was like, well, if the percentage of people making it on third down are 25%, and if Randall is able to give us 50%, I'm going to do that. Randall going in, it's third and long. It's a hard situation. Ron, come out. The kid has an opportunity. He might run and go get the first down, and we did that. And what happened was he was successful because we went, our percentage went up. So nobody could really bash him for that. I mean, it wasn't comfortable for Ron, but, I mean, he was also thinking he knew he could do the job, but at the same time, it's like, oh, third and long. Well, hey, go for it, brother. I'm coming back in. I know you'll get the first down. And at times I did. And on, you know, third and one, fourth and one, they'd bring Matt Kavanaugh, and he had a high percentage of making quarterback sneaks. And so Matt would do that, and, you know, it was cool because he could get us all involved.
You know, I think about the different plays, and there's plays that Philadelphia fans always remember that you were successful at, plays that you weren't successful at, but successful. What plays come to your mind when you think back to your career with the Eagles? Are there plays, and if so, what are they that come to mind?
I remember the punt. I remember
yards,
when we were
right?
just getting
91.
Yeah, I remember when we were getting dominant. Well, yeah. Well, thank God the guys tackled Dave Maggett in New York Stadium before he got to me. I was a little nervous. That I was going to get cleaned up, but I had asked Buddy if I could punt, and he said, yeah. So he said, stay out there, and I punted it and shanked it, but God's mercy was on me, and I thought I kicked it over our bench, and the wind brought it back in. Mm-hmm. I never seen a backwards spiral do that. Then there were, you know, then there were plays like in Buffalo where I threw a long bomb to Freddie, and we were just Buffalo was dominating us, and that was like a turnaround thing for us as a team where we really developed a confidence in each other because we had been going through some things, and that play just really helped me develop a relationship with guys like Seth Joyner and different players on the team. And then there was the play when I got injured and Eric Allen picked off a ball and brought in the end zone, and that like changed my life. I was like, hey, man, you're still with us. And that like, whew, that made a big difference for me because I was in the tank. I was out for the season. I was going to get surgery. Freddie Barnett got hurt that game. Jeff Seidner got hurt that game. We were all getting surgery from the same doctor. And it's like Eric Allen picked off that ball and brought it back to me and said, here, you know. And it's like that was a blessing for me. And, you know, then there was the New Orleans game where we went down there and we were, you know, we weren't doing very well. And Freddie Barnett and Calvin were, you know, catching bombs and quick and all the guys. And it was like we won that game. So it was a culmination of a lot of different plays that had impact on not only my career, but our team as well.
You know, you brought up, first of all, there's another play I remember before I talk about a specific player, is the play against the Giants. And I believe the touchdown pass was to Jimmy Giles when it looked like they had you and you were not tackled and you threw the pass to Jimmy Giles. Do you remember that? And you actually remember it. How much does that stick back in your memory?
Well, that was a play that Merle Reese, I have to mention that Merle Reese, he took me to the next level with just the words he said about it. We're looking at prime time and, you know, and the guys on Monday Night Football or whatever it was just their comments just said, this, we're looking at a guy that's ready for primetime football. And I didn't try to do that. I was just waiting for Jimmy. They were holding Jimmy as he was trying to come and get in the flat. And I just wanted to get rid of the ball right in front of him
and I get hit by Carl Banks, and I, you know, thank God I landed on 2 feet in one hand, and Jimmy just kept running, and the ball was right there. He caught it. If he wouldn't have caught that pass, we wouldn't be talking about it today.
It was obviously it's a play that's replayed so many different times in some of the NFL film stories, and it was.
Someone
it was
told just, me that it got ranked as the number one play of a certain time period.
It wouldn't shock me. I remember there's so many great things that NFL Films has put together, and I'm sure that play was
NFL Films is great.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Now you brought up the name Mike Quick. Mike was kind of a veteran. I mean, he was drafted in, I think it was 82. You came, I guess, 85 is your first year with the Eagles. How much of an influence was Mike Quick for you as a man and as a football player?
Well, Mike was just open to me as a friend, and he was willing to do whatever it took and taught me how to golf and, you know, help me with my dress because, you know, me, I was cheap. You know, I didn't know how to dress, and I had a jerry curl. But he took me under his wing. He and Jaworski both took me under his wing, and Jaworski taught me the game, but Mike Quick taught me about life and adjusting to the city and, you know, how to present myself when I went places, you know, because I was rough around the edges. And he was a great friend and still is to this day.
You know what? Philadelphia is a city, and you touched on it early, of controversy. And there was controversy after you were replaced in that playoff game. But those were not the only time. That was not the only time that there was controversy. How did you deal with it, and how did you accept the controversy?
It was hard, very, very difficult. You know, it was probably the most difficult thing I'd done in my life up to that point. And you know, even today, I'm not bitter about something, but I still have something in my memory that doesn't sit well with me. It's when my last year, Ray Rhodes came in and became the head coach. And, you know, he called me in his office, and he talked to me and says, "Hey, man, I need you to really get on these players." And I said, "Coach, I'm not going to curse at anybody. I'm not going to be derogatory towards my teammates." And he just really wanted me to, like, go off and get the guys to play through going off. And that wasn't me. You know, that would be phony. It would be hypocritical on my part. And, you know, Rodney Pete, they ended up starting Rodney Pete and benched me in Arizona. And, you know, I was trying to adjust to the offense, and I had never run the West Coast offense, but I had run probably seven offenses because I had seven offensive coordinators in 11 years. And I was adjusting again to another offense, and it was a great offense with John Gruden. You know, it was really good. I believed in it, but it was just a lot of memorization, and it takes time to learn the West Coast offense. But, you know, I had, you know, an off season and four games, and I didn't adjust. But the thing that got me, the controversial thing that got me, was at the end of the season playing against Detroit. Rodney was in, and he beat him, and we won the game. And they used me to go in and mop up. And I was thinking about that the other day, and it was like, wow, man. I've faced a lot of different things, and it was like in a stadium where I love the people. You know, I couldn't just go out and ride off in the sunset. I had to go and mop up, and it's like even that experience caused me to grow because it was a tough thing to be an MVP of the league twice, 3-time Pro Bowler, and then, you know, go in with 2 minutes left in the game and hand the ball off. And it was kind of like, wow. And I had to learn from that, saying, look, get rid of your pride. And, you know, during that offseason, that's what I was able to do.
You know, but as a young player, and the controversy in this town starts quickly, you can be great in the first quarter, not great in the second quarter, and when you come off at halftime, it's nuts. It's nuts when you listen to those people. Did you accept
it? I was at the Giants game. You remember when I came to the Giants game to flip the coin? And last season, and that was something. Like in the first quarter, we weren't doing good, and, you know, it was cold, and I was going back and forth on the field at halftime and doing presentations. And at halftime, I had to leave, and as I left, we were down, but it was like everybody was leaving the stadium. There was probably, you know, probably 40% of the stadium, the people left by halftime. And then I kept watching on TV. And then we came back and won the game. Carson Wentz, just like he was struggling in the beginning of the game, but he, like you said, in the quarters, he came back and he brought us back. And I was like, that's the controversial thing and the difficulty of a town where a lot is expected out of you. You've got to really be on your P's and Q's at all times.
Well, and that's, it's kind of interesting, but it's not, I would think it's not the easiest thing to do, correct?
And a lot of these athletes, it's so amazing. You come in as a number one pick, you last 4 years, and then you're on another team. Nelson Aguilar, he's out here with the Raiders, and I'm watching him. He trains at my facility. I'm watching him train. I'm like, this kid is ridiculously good. The other day he was with the quarterback that we just signed from University of Oregon, and he was playing catch. He didn't drop any balls. And I had talked to John Gruden. He says, yeah, the kid just needed a break. And it's like, sometimes you don't get that break. Sometimes it's just hardcore, and it is what it is. So I've seen a lot of first-round draft pick guys get 3-4 years in, and they're all over the league. And then the next thing you know, here they are playing with the Las Vegas Raiders.
You know, you mentioned John Gruden, and you have been named the chaplain for the, I wanted to say Oakland Raiders. We're going to get, there are a lot of people going to do that.
Las Vegas, brother.
Yeah, Las Vegas, yeah. Raiders. Did that stem from your relationship with John Gruden when you and he were together here with the Eagles?
I think part of it did on his side, but Napoleon Kaufman, who was a great running back for the Raiders back around the time when Charlie Garner left Philly and went to the Raiders, he was a chaplain. And he said, hey, brother, I know you're not an ex-Raider, you're not Raider Nation, but I'm going to suggest you for the job. And I said, I'll pray about it. And John gave me a call, and he said, hey, man, you know, we're going to do some great things. And we just laughed on the phone. And it was really amazing how close we still were when we haven't, you know, because I've called him over the years, just, you know, saying congratulations, I'm praying for you and things like that. But when Napoleon told me about that, I just started praying for the Raiders as far as them, their transition coming to Las Vegas, that the guys wouldn't get in trouble, that they'd find houses, that their families would find the right schools. And, you know, if I was supposed to be the chaplain for them, that I would assume that responsibility. And then when Mark Davis called me the other day, he said, the owner of the team, of course, he right. said, Randall, welcome to the team. And then before he got off the phone, he says, I said, Mark, I'm here for you spiritually, whatever you need. I said, just anytime, call me. He says, Randall, I'm here for you, whatever you need. And he said, I love you, man. And it's like, wow. You know, I haven't heard that, you know, in the business arena, you know, and that was a great feeling. And I understand why they call them Raider Nation now, because they're building families.
You talk about the owners, and I believe for most of your career, Norman Brayman was the owner. Now, he let Reggie White get away, which was not a good thing for the Eagles. What was your relationship, you know, with management here when you were with the Eagles? And I think Norman Brayman was the owner for most of your years.
Yeah, and then Lurie came in towards the end. I had a great relationship. Right after Toes came in, I met Toes, but he wasn't the owner because Norman Brayman took over, so we came right. in about the same time. But I had a great relationship with him. He treated me, he was a businessman, and I respected him as a businessman. He was not my father figure. He was more like a person who I could go to and bounce business off. And I remember at one point in time, I went to Mr. Brayman, because I didn't call him Norm, I called him Mr. Brayman. Mm-hmm. And I said, Mr. Brayman, you've paid me a lot of money. I said, you've given me a lot of money. I said, I don't know what to do with this money. Can you please tell me what a billionaire would do with the money? He said, Rand, here's what you do. You go and buy certificates of deposits, and you just let them roll over. And then later on in life, you look and you say, hey, I've done a good job. So I started doing that. And I thank God that he treated me as a son in that moment, and told me, this is what you need to do. Be conservative. Don't go out and buy lots of cars and this and that. You only need one car, you know, get a nice house and just be conservative. And, you know, I try to stick with the conservative thing.
That didn't work, Randall. I don't think it worked.
Well, I didn't go overboard. I didn't really buy jets or boats or anything like that, but I bought custom suits. Okay.
You sure did.
I still,
I still got my trousers from Ross Dress for Less, so I try to stay up.
Hey, Randall, yeah. the three really good years, 88, 89, 90, what do you think was the best part of those years and the reason? Now, you didn't have playoff success. I think you had one playoff win here,
right.
But they were really good years for you. What was it that helped in that regard?
It was camaraderie. It was Buddy Ryan trusting me. And making things plain and simple with our team offensively, just go out and have fun. You know, if you guys have fun, you're going to be good. And, you know, he knew that we were still trying to get the offensive line together, but he was building the defense. And so, you know, we were trying to do what we could do, but he wanted us to have fun. And he said, it's a tough town. He says, but these people, they'll love you if you go out there and give them some excitement and have fun. And, you know, that's what we did. But it was the receivers, you know, and, you know, guys like Byron Evans and Andre Waters and Wes Hopkins, you know, the late Wes Hopkins and late Andre Waters. These guys were hardcore. I mean, and then you look at Reggie up front, you look at Mike Pitts and Golic and Jerome Brown, the late Jerome Brown. And I mean, it was like when I went into the game, it was like Buddy said. He says, you guys go make your plays and the defense is going to do their job. I remember we would run our blitz drill in practice. And Reggie, Jerome, Mike Pitts, Golic, and Andre Waters, and Todd Scott. I mean, not Todd Scott, but he was a backer with us, too. These guys would blitz, man, and it was like a joke to drop back because it was like they were going to get in the backfield within a second and a half. And it was like I would just catch the ball, and I would hand it to the coach because they were excellent at blitzing. And you saw that in practice, and it was like, man, this is awesome, having a defense that's like that, you know? One of the greatest defenses in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, it sure was. Now, when you went to Minnesota, you were so close to getting to a Super Bowl. But you obviously, you had grown or matured or whatever you want to call it, it seems, when you were playing quarterback at Minnesota. What was it that got you to be, and I don't think I'm out of line by saying this, to be a better quarterback when you went to the Minnesota Vikings?
It was... I think it was God's divine appointment to have me there. I mean, I went on YouTube and I was just watching the 1998 games because I just wanted to see what we did. And I was I was looking at Robert Smith in the backfield and David Palmer would come in on third down. I'm like, oh my God, if these guys played like 13 years, he'd be the best guys in the history of the league too. Then you got Chris Carter, you got Jake Reed, you got Andrew Glover, Matthew Hatchett. And then you had Andrew Glover tied in. And then you looked at our line. Our line was a Pro Bowl line from Stussy to McDaniels, just all the way down the line. You know, Christie and Corey Stringer. I mean, you had guys who were huge and they loved each other. And it was like our offense, like we knew that we had a great offense. But then you add Brian Billick to that, and Brian Billick. he with percentages, he was like a genius at what he did. And then, you know, with Denny Green as a head coach, and yeah, I mean, it's like he was kind of like he'd pump us up before the game. You know, he'd give us these speeches, and we'd want to go out and fight and play as soon as we got out of the team meeting. You know, and I mean, even the way we ate our food, it was like we ate our food like we were in the game. Like, you know, it was like there was this presence of just a dominant team, and things in practice were like, you better be perfect on your passes. You better be perfect on your routes, your blocking. There was a high expectancy of excellence with our offense. And Chris Carter would yell. If I threw a ball low to him, he'd say, get the ball up. If he dropped the ball, you know, I'd say, man, catch the ball. And it was like, we put pressure on each other to be great. And when Randy got there, it helped out, you know, all the more because here you got a 6 foot four and a half running 4.342 and eye coordination. It was amazing. He could catch a ball at the last second, you know, and he was just great. And then everybody played their role. And Brian Billick, he was great with that, having guys do certain things.
He never held it against Gary Anderson for missing that field goal, right? You kind of moved past that?
Gary had done an excellent job, and I kind of looked at it. You know what? It just wasn't God's will. It wasn't his fault. I should have thrown a touchdown right before the half, but my arm got hit. And, you know, they got it, and they kicked the field, and the game was close. If I would have let that ball go a little earlier, Chris Carter would have caught it, and he would have ran 7 yards for a touchdown, and then, you know, I might be sitting here with the Super Bowl ring on right now.
Yeah. Randall, when there's so many things that you can look back in your career, but I can't forget the television show. And you had a TV show, and I believe it was one here in Philadelphia. And Donald Trump was a guest.
I think I had it for about 7 years, yeah.
Right, and Donald Trump
was a guest. You're right.
What was Donald, I mean, he was different then, obviously. What was Donald Trump like as a guest?
That's so funny to bring up Donald. I just put a call into him the other day just to say hello and just to encourage him because he's going through so much. And back then, I guess everyone in Philadelphia who knew me back then, I had a wedding, and my wedding was at the Trump Taj Mahal, which is no longer the Trump Taj Mahal. It's now, I don't know what it is.
It's the Hard Rock.
Right. So I was at Jim Kelly's charity function, and I met Donald Trump there. And of course, he had owned the New Jersey Generals, so he's a big sports fan. And I got time to sit with him back then, and like he was the most down to earth person. I'm like, hold on, this guy's a billionaire, and he just sits and talks to you just like he's your friend, like he's your brother. And so we got on a private jet or something, and it was Kelly, Kosar, Dan Marino, and myself. I think we were flying to New York. And we had something to do with the quarterback club. So we all flew and we all exchanged numbers and things like that. And I was doing a show called the Randall Cunningham Celebrity Rap. It was an international show that I had syndicated. And I asked Donald and I asked President Trump. I asked Andre Agassi, Downtown, Julie Brown, and Charles Barkley. And I did the show. And I went to his office and I sat with him. And he was just down to earth, great person. And the next thing you know, I said, you know, my wife and I said, we're getting married. And so I called him. I said, Donald, I said, you know, we want to come and get married at your casino. So he says, yeah, Randall, anything you need. So he had this big meeting room with about 30 people, whether it was the chef, the front desk manager, valet, I mean, everyone he could think of, the pastry person, you know, convention people. He said, give him whatever he asks. And I said, wow. So he said, what do you want to eat, Randall? I said, honey, what do you want? She said, lobster. And I said, okay, I would like to have steak and lobster for everyone at our wedding. And he said, what else? He just gave me carte blanche for everything we needed. And he says, do you have any problems with people or anything like that? I said, no, not really. So he said, I'm going to give you 40 of my best security, all my undercover military guys. And so I said, okay. So I said, there is one request I have. I said, I'd like your presidential suite. He said, I'll give you that for free. And I said, wow, okay. And, you know, a lot of people would say, well, yeah, of course, you're Randall Cunningham. He wants you to gamble. It wasn't about that. It was just that's who he was at that time. And so we went to the wedding. He shows up and he's partying and, you know, he's dancing with everybody. And, you know, Urkel was there and a lot of celebrities were there. And it was just a great time. So my memory of him is that. And then I asked him, you know, he did my syndicated show. And, you know, he said, hey, I got to head down to Mar-a-Lago. And then I get a call from him and he says, Randall, he says, hey, I want to introduce you to someone. So he introduces me to Marla Maples and my wife to Marla Maples. And he says, we're getting married. Come to our wedding. And so we went to the wedding. And that's the relationship I have with him. And later on, I heard that he had built Trump Towers here in Las Vegas. I call him up. He gets on the phone. And I said, he says, how can I help you, buddy? And I said, I just would like to know how much your condos are. I'd like to buy one of your condos. And he says, all right, brother, here's Rona, my secretary. And he said, anything else you need? I said, no, that's the only thing that I know about Donald Trump. I don't all this tweeting and things like that. some of the stuff's out there, you know, and but like a lot of the things, like he's a racist, he's this, he's that. I've never seen those things, and so the only relationship I have with him is what I just shared with you. Other than that, you know, when it comes time to vote, I'm just going to pray. I'm going to say, God, you know, who are you pushing? I'm going to push the button, whatever he says. I'm not just going to vote just because I have a friendship with him. I'm going to vote basically on what God says to do, whether it's Biden or whether it's him. I've got to push the right button. So, you know, I don't sway people to the left or to the right. It's just, you know, it is what it is. But that's the relationship I have with him.
Tell me about your life as a pastor of Remnant Ministries, and obviously that's a big part of that is your life right now, right?
Yeah. When we got on the phone, you talked about you never had a bad day in your life, but you said during this coronavirus, it's been different. It's been difficult. Hey, let me tell you something. Being a leader of everyone who goes through stuff is one thing, but being the shepherd and the pastor of people who are going through a pandemic and going through all of the things that we've been seeing and the riots and the demonstrations and the killings. And, you know, it's like, I have to cycle all of that through my mind, and I have to respond, not in the political way, not in a way that tells people what they want to hear, but in a spiritual way. So, you know, it's been very, very difficult, but the amazing thing about this whole thing is that before the pandemic, we had about 1,100 people coming to our church on a Sunday morning. I teach three services. We're online on remnantministries.net. Like I said, we have a lot of people from Philadelphia who follow us, and like we're the church. But during this pandemic, they told us we couldn't have church. So basically, we were online, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, we got 1,100 people online. I mean, 1,100 people showed up. We got 400 people online. We got 1,600 people to come to church. I was like, oh, my God, we're going to lose our congregation. The building's going to possibly have to be shut down. And we just began to pray. And now they've allowed us to have some people. So we'll have, you know, 300 people there over three services. And we can get 150 per service, according to CDC. But online, on our remnantministries.net app, we have 1,600 people now instead of 400. On Facebook, we have 1,200. So we have close to 3,000 people. And so that's been the encouragement, is that, you know, when you think things may go the other way, God has turned it around. Even the people are supporting us all around the world financially. It's like, this is your church, and we believe in you, Randall. And whenever we come to town, we get so many people from Philadelphia, New Jersey, and Delaware. Whenever they come to Vegas, they come and they give me a hug. Hey, Randall. Oh, yeah, pastor now, you know. I was a big fan, and we take pictures, and it's awesome because I have a relationship with them still. But we've gone from 1,500, 1,600 people to 3,000 people, and on Christmas and Resurrection, we'll have 3,800 people, close to 4,000 people watching this online. So it's been a blessing, but it's been very difficult because I've got to be in that pulpit really, you know, sharing. And our service is only 1 hour. I teach for about 25 to 30 minutes, and you know, we get lots of great comments, and, you know, a lot of people from Philadelphia told me, congratulations on becoming a chaplain. It's great. You're going to be a good fit because you'll be able to help the guys out. And that's all I want to do.
All right. There's two things that I want to touch on before we close. Mike Quick, you said, helped you to learn how to play golf. Mike Quick is a good player.
He still beat me, though.
He's a good player, but has he ever improved his lie? Or kind of, hey, and it's like a five-footer. it's good. Has Mike ever kind of done that? I want the truth and nothing but the truth.
Speak the truth and it'll set me free, huh?
Yes, correct.
We're buddies, you know, so it's kind of like if your ball is in the right. I tell you what, we would all improve our lives, but he never did something. Chris Carter was the funniest. Chris Carter would be like, hey, man, he hit his ball out of bounds, and he'd find it. Mike wouldn't do that. He'd hit another one from back where he was at. Yeah, Mike's my brother.
Yeah, well, it's good. Mike's a great guy, and obviously on the broadcast, I work with Mike and Merrill, and it's fun. It's really fun. All right, and lastly, your message, if you had something, and I'm giving you the opportunity now, I want you to say, what do you want to say to the fans of the Philadelphia area?
Well, I always want to say thank you. I mean, I get kind of emotional because it's like I don't get to spend time back there, but I got an opportunity to go over and spend time with the Falks, Charlie Falk and his pop, and, you know, mom and pop have gone on to be with the Lord. But it's like, I just love that I still have a relationship with people back there. You know, even though we don't see each other, it's kind of like my high school graduate mates. It's like, they might be spread all over the world, but we're still able to call each other as though, you know, we talked to each other yesterday. And that's the thing that's great about being in Philadelphia, is that the fans were harsh. They were my brothers and my sisters, you know, and my uncles and my aunties, you know, people in the church in Camden, New Jersey. And it was just, you know, I'm just grateful. Just thank you for continuing to support me even as a pastor. And, you know, for the people who still watch us weekly, I'm grateful. And I wanted to share this too. I just did something new. Some people called me the other day, and I didn't even know about that. But there's this app called Cameo, and I don't know, maybe you know about it. You might be a part of it, but it's called Cameo. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you go on the Cameo app, and you can get me or whoever you want, and you can say, hey, Randall Cunningham, wish my dad a happy birthday. And you can say, oh, by the way, my uncle's having an anniversary. And there's a charge, of course, but I'm able to do that, and I've been doing that lately. And it's like, it's really opened me up and allowed me to have communication with people because I can respond back to them even though I don't know them. And like I said, there's a fee for it. But it's cool because I could still reach out to people all over the world. And there was a guy that I reached out to. He had been sober for 2 years. And I was able to reach out and say, hey, congratulations. And it's a video. And keep on doing what you're doing. Stay strong, brother. And whenever you come to Las Vegas, come to church, man. We'll take a picture. It's like I'm able to communicate with people that way rather than just Facebook. And I'm not really big on Instagram. But through Cameo, I'm able to talk to people and send them wishes and things like that. People in the hospital and, you know, birthdays and things like that. So I love doing that. That's like the newest thing I started last week. Someone contacted me and said, will you do this? And I said, yeah.
Well, that's great. It's great catching up. It was, really interesting, the different things that have gone on in your life, from flamboyance to gold tip shoes. And just be careful. Don't eat too many of those candy bars. I walk every day now, and I do like 13 to 15 miles a day, and I try to stay away from the sugar. So keep it low on the sugar there with the Randall Cunningham candy bar, all right?
And yeah, they're Hershey with almond bars now, buddy. But I just ask people just to go get the Cameo app and to use me. That'd be cool. Okay. Thanks so much for having me on, Howard.
No,
I really
Randall,
appreciate it.
I really do appreciate your time. And we had an interesting dynamic. But I guess
had issues, man, just like I did. issues when we were younger, man.
I can say I'm happy that you forgave me and I have forgiven you for whatever it was that we did. So thanks.
You got it.
Thanks. Hey, stay healthy.
Thank you for having me on.
Stay safe and say hello to your wife for me as well.
You got it.
Randall really said some very, very interesting things. He was flamboyant. He was clearly different both on and off the field. And it was nice to talk to him. He's always trying to sell something, but that's Randall, and that's the character and the personality. And you take it all when you take Randall Cunningham. The other thing that that I want to talk about, and I was remiss to talk about it on my show, I tweeted about it quite often. I wanted to talk about Tony Taylor. Tony Taylor, which a lot of people may not remember. Tony played for the Phillies for quite a few years, played for other teams in Major League Baseball. But Tony Taylor was, in the 70s, was the last time that he played with him. But he passed away. He passed away this week, I believe it was July 16th.
And he was such a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human being. A wonderful human being. And I can't say that enough. A nice guy, nice to everybody. But you wish that 30% of who Tony Taylor was are in today's professional athletes. And there's some professional athletes that are really nice, but nothing on the level of Tony. Tony was just always had nice things to say. When he came in for alumni weekend for the Phillies, I always asked, how you doing? What's going on? When my father was still alive, he'd ask about my dad, who he knew from seeing so many times in spring training. But he is beyond a terrific person, not just to me, not just to somebody who may be an athlete or a media person. He was nice to everybody, signed everything, waited for people after the games. He was just a sensational, sensational human being. And the world is going to miss Tony Taylor, who played second base for the Phillies, if you didn't know that. But he was a good hitter. His statistics don't mean anything. He had 2,000 hits, but it doesn't matter. That's not what defined Tony Taylor. Tony Taylor is defined as a terrific human being, and my condolences to his wife Clara and his family and his friends, and he still had a lot of friends in Philadelphia. I know I will miss seeing Tony Taylor every year at Alumni Weekend, and I know I'm not alone. There's a lot of people that will miss Tony. There's not words to describe how good he is. So I just wanted to mention that, and I didn't want to let that go because I was so tight and busy in my show, but that's no excuse. And I will mention it when I'm on the radio during the week. I miss Tony Taylor already, and a lot of people I know are in the same position as I am. Thanks again for joining us on the Howard Eskin podcast. We will have another, hopefully, great person to have a conversation with on our next Howard Eskin podcast.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.